This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Out of training camp once again today, Brock and Salk for day two. Let's see, Brock, 9 o'clock, we're going to open up the lines to hear from everybody and what's on your mind, whether it's Seahawks or some Mariner conversation, as Oakland is now a game back and Houston only 5 ahead. So some good baseball conversation just a few days away from the trade deadline. Of course, Earl Thomas not showing up and Pete's response to that yesterday. There's a lot going on. I think Pete diffused that, by the way. I mean, I barely even wanted to talk much about it. I thought he did a really good job of just diffusing it yesterday.
I would agree with that. And it wasn't just trying to be something he's not, right? And I didn't think he would. I mean, he's 67 years old, for crying out loud. And your first takeaway is he's everything and all of that and more all the time. But it wasn't just a, you know, love fest either. You know, it wasn't some of the language we've heard over the last few years.
Now, let's play it real quick. This was Pete Carroll cut to just addressing the Earl Thomas situation yesterday.
Well, you know, he's been here for a long time. We always expect him to be here. I mean, it's kind of how it is, you know. So he should be here, and he's not. So it's really about the guys that are here and now, and we're going to keep moving and grooving and put it together. And it's unfortunate.
There you go. It's unfortunate. Say it.
Yep.
Not much else to say. And I thought he did a really good job of kind of just taking a lot of the wind out of the sails of that conversation. Just one of many takeaways.
Takeaways.
All right, I opened your eyes and ears yesterday, Brock. You had to run to get on a plane to go to Atlanta. I watched practice in the sun. So here are some takeaways. I'll tell you what they were. You can tell me what they mean. Ready?
Okay, yep.
How many coaches in the league danced during practice? I mean, legit danced during practice. How many coaches wear gloves and throw a football during class, during practice? How many coaches sprint off the field as fast as they can? How many do all of those things at the age of 67 years old?
Oh, that's it. Okay. So I was kind of playing this game, trying to dwindle it down. Like, dance? Yeah, you've got probably
zero.
It does.
No. No way. None.
Absolutely not.
There
Mike,
are
you
no
got
other
young
coaches.
Guys that are going to dance. Absolutely, you've got at
Who?
Least 10.
Who dances?
Oh, I'm sure our boy in Nagy in Chicago is a dancer.
Who?
Nagy.
Never heard
Charles
of him.
Nagy's brother. Tomlin's going to dance.
Sean no. McVay probably gets down
False.
A little bit.
Stop it. Tomlin
yes.
does not dance.
Tomlin's
no.
a dancer.
He
gets
is
his
not.
Eyes popping out of
no
his head. Yes, he does.
Way.
We heard
no.
Ron Rivera
False.
Dance.
Not a dancer.
He's got his own little
Ron
move.
Rivera does not
yes,
dance.
He
You're
does.
Wrong on all of these.
So there's going to be some that dance, but then you throw in the gloves, then you throw in 67, then you throw sprinting off the field. There's none like Pete.
It's amazing. He's unique. And I just found myself watching him as much as anyone else yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And I know, you know, the guys may hesitate to describe their relationship with him. KJ Wright, it was a little awkward, I thought, yesterday. And we may get Richard and others sniping from afar. But Pete's just at the center of this circus. And everything about him is positive. And for the right player, maybe not for everybody, and maybe not for that long. But for the right player, it just has to be a really cool experience.
Yeah, for a young player. And you just heard the difference there, the contrast in the last 2 days, I think, with KJ that shares 7, 8 years of history, that there's so much, you know, challenge of the last year of buddies that have gone and so much of the loyalty and so much of the stuff that unfortunately gets cut out in the business side of the NFL that Pete can't control at all versus Shaquille right there. Like, oh, I love sitting by Pete. And Pete's, you know, talking to me and in my ear all the time. It's why Pete thrived in college. Mike, when he left the NFL and he went to college football in SC and built a dynasty for a decade, he loves young people. He says it all the time. Young people are the fuel for the world and the next generation. And, you know, so not a surprise that he's still energetic. What was he? Was there a song that stood out that he could really move to and groove to?
He was moving and grooving, as he said about Earl Thomas.
What's there?
I don't know. They played some good music. There was a lot of rock. I mean, you got like some Guns N' Roses and AC/DC and some of that type. Bon Jovi, I think I heard.
Really
Zappa
important
here,
question. Did they play Level Up?
No. There was, although Sierra was here, I did not hear any Level Up.
Did
although
they play...
Tom said there was another Sierra song that was played.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't catch that.
They play any Migos?
I heard some Migos, yes.
Yeah.
I heard some of this.
I mean, that's what I like to dance to.
Hopefully this is edited.
Walk it like I talk it. Walk it, like I talk it. Walk it like I talk it.
Walk it.
Walk it like I talk it. Walk it. Walk it.
This is what Pete and
dancing to that.
What are his Air? See, Raj, what kind of shoes does he have?
Air Monarchs.
Not the Contras. Yeah,
he was wearing the Monarchs. He was dancing to Migos. Pete was the third best dancer, as I said, after watching Jaron Reed and Brandon Jackson pull some sort of routine.
All right.
That was definitely the highlight. All right.
Nice.
What's next?
Takeaways.
Bobby Wagner is so much more explosive than the other linebackers, and that's not a shot at any of them. It's just crazy how he is. And I know we talk about this every single year at training camp. We did last year after they were doing a drill where he put the guy holding a bag onto his back, and the guy's like, my back! Bobby just blew that dude up. But yesterday, the thing I noticed it on was a sled drill, and I'll try to describe it, Brock.
Okay.
So the linebackers, one at a time, is a long sled with like five or six different parts to it, pads to it, and so they would kind of get into almost a foot fire, if you know that from playing basketball or football, and quickly explode with the hands and like lock out the arms and then bring them back and slide constantly left to right and keep hitting it with their arms. That makes sense? So I describe
totally.
That okay?
Totally. And hit it with their hands, though,
yes,
right?
With their hands. I'm sorry. Yes. They hit it with their hands, with like their palms.
Yep.
And everybody did it. Bobby moved slower with his feet moving faster than anybody else. So he did more foot fire, hit the bag every time harder than anyone else, even the guys who like really laid into it. He didn't even have to. He's just so fast, strong, and explosive. And it was amazing seeing that. Hmm. And then seeing him walk over to be the first person to do the press conference, a new role for him, sort of the leader of this team. And he delivered what I thought was a calm, fun, informative performance. The whole thing was just a really impressive day for Bobby Wagner.
That's good. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And my first image is honestly you, me, and Kyle down in Peoria walking into the batting cage. And, you know, it's not a tackling sled or in that case, you know, what they're trying to simulate are those linebackers sliding down the line of scrimmage. Salk and take it on a guard or fullback. Like KJ was talking to us about yesterday. Anybody and everybody can come block you when you're playing linebacker. So that drill is done to stay square, to shed those guys, to do it with tremendous pop, you know, in their feet and in their hands. But I'll go back to those batting cages, you, me, and Kyle, and we can watch 10 major leaguers hit, even Robbie Cano and Seager. And then all of a sudden, when Nelly does it, it just sounds different. It's scary. Like, that's just, how does he create that much power and force? And you know what? All you got to do is look at Bobby and Nelson Cruz. They're, you know, Bobby's 255 pounds. I mean, it's just freakish. You know, Mingo ran by us yesterday, and Shaquem, you know, ran by us, and those guys are, you know, nowhere near. And even KJ, I mean, it just doesn't carry 255 pounds and to be so explosive. I think one of the plays really represented that last year was what Bobby did to Kirk Cousins in that end zone, and just that amount of force that he brings to the table is just different.
Takeaways.
Well, surprised that Tedrick Thompson got the first shot at starting opposite McDougal. I don't think anybody expected it, although when we talked to KJ yesterday, who did he mention as one of the young guys that had stood out? It was T2, he said. We had to figure out who that meant, but he was talking about Tedrick Thompson. All of a sudden, he becomes the first name at training camp. Now, look, maybe it means nothing. Maybe it means that he's ahead of Delano Hill. Maybe it means those two guys are going to battle. Maybe it means that they're trying to be faster as opposed to more physical on the back end, right? So the combination of Tedrick and McDougal is fast. The combination of McDougal and Hill should be a little bit more physical, and maybe they are more interested in speed at the back end this year. I'm not really sure, but it was surprising. Now, look, Pete did say that today they would flip that. But, you know, what you decide to do day one is usually indicative of what you think gives yourself the best chance. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody expected that would be Tedrick Thompson over Delano Hill.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Hey, see, Raj, can I hear KJ yesterday? Because we asked him about some of these young players and who was kind of stepping in and emerging a little bit. This is what Salk was referencing. KJ Wright pointed out T2 to us yesterday.
He's good. He's sideline to sideline. I remember last year he was killing. I mean, he was really picking off Russell a lot in practice. And so he just played really free. He can come down playing the box. He knows his run fits, so he's going to be good.
He was killing Russ. You could say it. He was killing Russ in practice last year, picking him off all the time. We'd heard that, actually. We'd heard some of those rumblings over the course of the season. And Tedrick, you remember yesterday I was talking to you, Salk, and I forget who I was referencing. Maybe it was Malik McDowell. And I said, man, there's just not a lot of track record and a huge resume of success, you know, collegiately for a bunch of these guys looking to fill that role. Well, that's not true with Tedrick at all. I mean, that guy played multiple years. He was one of the best in all of college football, taking the ball away and making plays on the ball from the safety position. And frankly, had he run low 4.4s at the combine, he's drafted probably in the second round or early third round, and he doesn't sit around all the way to the fourth. But, you know, when you run 4.55 at the combine or whatever his number was, 4.58, all of a sudden people are like, yep, can't go red line to red line in the NFL. Could get away with it in the Pac-12 and in college, can't do it in the NFL. But his instincts, his know-how, his playmaking ability, to me, that's why that move was made. It's made to put Bradley McDougald as a very secure. He's going to be in the right spot. He's never going to mess you up. And oh, by the way, he'll cover guys very well from strong safety, maybe even better than Cam. And then Tedrick is a guy that's got instincts. He knows how to play the ball. And for a team that needs turnovers and needs them in bunches, and I think for some of the limitations they'll have with the pass rush, you know, there's some good indicators for Tedrick moving
it's
forward.
It's interesting because they do need those things, but they also need some of that physicality. And you start wondering where the boom is going to be lowered from. You know, you got Bobby Wagner, and I don't know that there's any, maybe Frank, if he's out there. Not a lot of other big hitters on this team. You used to have Richard Sherman, who for his position was a bigger hitter. Obviously, Cam Chancellor. We've seen Earl deliver some crushing blows despite his lack of size. You know, you start removing, you know, Cliff and Michael and some of the bigger hitters on the team,
yep.
And you wonder where some of that power is going to come from. Interesting that they went with Tedrick over Delano. But one thing we've always heard from Pete is how important speed is on that defense, and maybe that's why you make the move you do.
Takeaways.
All right, takeaways from yesterday's first practice of training camp. When we talked about position battles yesterday, Brock, I forgot one. Shame on me. Backup quarterback. That's a position battle going on right now between Austin Davis and Magoo. And your boy Magoo had what I thought was kind of a rough day yesterday for
okay.
the rook.
Talk to me.
Well, he tried to stop during cadence to ask Schottenheimer a question.
Okay, that's tough. That's a tough look.
I guess Schottenheimer kind of was like... There may have been some harsh language used. Kind of told him, you've lost the play. You can't stop in the middle and ask me for help. Get out there and play football.
He pulled a Roger from Tacoma.
Yeah, he just kind of froze.
Just a little moment there. Hey, game's speeding up on me.
Game sped up on him.
Yeah.
I got in the middle of cadence, game sped up. And they're like, yeah, that's not what we do around here. You better run something, even if it's wrong. Don't just stop. So that wasn't great. What's going to determine who wins this job? I mean, obviously, it's upside of Magoo versus the security of having Davis.
Yeah.
If I had to bet right now, not based on what I've seen, but just based on theory, I would bet that Magoo wins the job if he shows anything at all. But they keep tabs on Davis just in case they need him if they need another quarterback. Does that
make
sense?
Yeah, I think so. Or you could equally flip that and just say, I'm sorry, backup quarterback is too valuable. I mean, I know Russell is unbelievably tough and has played through injuries that other guys wouldn't. But, you know, let's keep Magoo on a practice squad. We're not going to lose him and just, you know, keep two guys active that way.
Nah, it's not that valuable to them after they kept the guy from, Texas.
Boykin?
TCU around Boykin.
Trevon Boykin?
Yeah.
The Boy King?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's not that important to them.
Well,
I mean, they kept Boykin around for that long.
Yeah, they did. But I think this will be determined in preseason games. Does Magoo just brain fart over and over and over, or does he kind of handle it? Because I would totally expect Austin to be a pro. What he's done in the preseason last year to beat out the Boy King and everything else is he knows how to play, and he's at least got some background. He's got snaps under his belt. He's not going to be so overwhelmed at any moment, even in real action. In fact, he even beat the Seahawks when he started against them with the Rams way back when, I believe, with Schottenheimer as his coordinator. So I think Magoo has got to function and function pretty well in these preseason games. And if he is overwhelmed by the moment, it's just too fast. It's moving too far around him. He'll be a practice squad guy.
I would tell you that if I were trying to make this team as a backup quarterback, I would show how great I was at holding. Because I'm not, you know, John Ryan can do it. I don't know if he's going to be on the team this year. And by all accounts, that's not Michael Dixon's strength in the world. So if it were me,
yeah,
I would show what a great holder I was to whoever was.
That's
going
a solid
to
takeaway right
That'd
there.
That'd be me. All right, next
takeaways.
All right, Lydia, cover your ears. Body image time.
Are they covered, Lydia?
I mean, I can't because I want to keep you on the air.
Cover your ears. Deion Jordan is still and by far the most impressive physical specimen I can. But he's got another injury, and it's not even his knee. It's something else. We don't even know what it is, but he's going to be on pup to start the year here. It's no good, man. And the pass rush needs him and Frank. Frank is hurt with these hand surgeries that he just had. And Brock, I think you're right that he had those at a time to kind of point out what that pass rush would look like without him and Deion Jordan in there. Well, guess what? Without those two guys, it's a scary situation.
You think?
Yeah, I do. It's scary with them in there, to be honest with
Jacob
you.
Jacob Martin and Brandon Jackson and, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's going to be a move before the regular season roster is set. I don't know what that is going to be. If there's a young analyst there from MIT that's working in there in John Schneider's closet right now and trying to put together a Denard Span and Colome deal like the Mariners did and find, you know, maybe it's not a draft pick for Earl. Maybe it's a player. Maybe it's somebody they're incredibly high on that's got some upside that actually played in this league. But that is the biggest position of need, bar none. I like their corners. I like the depth of veteran guys and Nico Thorpe and B-Max with some of the other young guys. Linebackers at the front end are some of the best in the league. D-tackle rotation with some veterans coming in. Offense is more set than it's been. Receiver will be competitive, but there's no doubt the biggest hole on this team is their pass rush. And yeah, it's just unfortunate that Deion can't do it, man. He just cannot be the most important ability you have, and that is availability.
Truly too bad, man. He is built like a Greek god. You see him out here in a situation where 90 guys are out here and like 75 of them are incredibly impressive physically.
Yeah.
He stands out amongst all of
them. Okay, do you want just a slight little body image for me? Like, I don't do this a lot, and it's kind of goofy and creepy when I do, but the thing that just stands out, why he truly stands out, is how narrow, like, his waist is and how broad his shoulders are. It is just, it is like that.
Well,
it's
height just, and everything else.
Oh, I know, he's 6'7", but, you know, it's just he's probably a 30-inch waist and probably like a 50, I don't even know what shoulder.
What does he look like as a power forward?
Karl Malone plus.
Looks, I mean, like, how crazy is the, like, he would be such a good power forward?
LeBron. You know, I bet it'd be interesting to compare. LeBron's probably an inch taller. Basketball guys always get, you know, another inch in shoes and everything else. So Deion's probably 6'6". LeBron's 6'7". And he's LeBron James. That's what he is. Like, shoulders are just, like, that's just superhuman and can do crazy stuff. So there you go.
Yeah, he's got to be out there to do him, though.
That's your body image shot for the day.
There you go.
Earmuffs off, Lydia.
Takeaways.
Yeah, we hit on this briefly earlier, and it's not so much from practice as it was from the post-practice experience. Pete Carroll talking about the end of the road here for Malik McDowell, that a career that never was with the Seahawks. Of all the things that have gone wrong in the past 2 years for the Seahawks, and there have been a few. Obviously, the Cam Chancellor injury and the Cliff Averill injury, and, you know, things just going awry with some of the other veterans and other picks that haven't really worked out. Nothing has been worse than Malik McDowell.
Nope.
They planned for Cam by drafting a couple of safeties and by bringing in McDougal. Cliff was hurt, but he was already an older player, and decline was inevitable with him. They needed McDowell to be good, and if not, they at least needed the picks they gave up for Sheldon Richardson, who came in to try to replace him, and now that he's been waived, I mean, the whole thing is just a brutal screw up from start to finish, all because, you know, this guy did something that I believe is really dumb. And I know there are people out there who don't have that take and disagree and say, well, he did something that a lot of people did. All he did was ride an RV. Yeah, you know what? I think that's dumb. And especially to have done it without a helmet or whatever the heck happened. I think
an
it's
ATV.
Dumb.
An ATV.
What did I say? An RV. Yeah, an ATV, yes. Is obviously what I
said. Are you in an RV glamping this weekend?
No RV.
ATV in?
You know who is
in
an RV? You know who is in an RV? Did you see this story?
Howdy?
No.
What?
Baker
Mayfield. And Tyrod Taylor bought an RV for training camp. They're in it, and no one else is allowed in. It's like their fort.
Oh.
They built a fort, a QB fort, at Cleveland Browns camp.
I kind of like that.
They were coming up with great names on Twitter yesterday, like the Winna Baker.
Oh, I like that.
Not bad.
Tyrod Trailer.
That's really funny. Isn't that great?
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like that.
Wait, we played that Pete Carroll sound earlier. Played again, though.
Because he references the Sheldon Richardson part.
Yep.
this whole process has been disappointing because he had a real upside. And, you know, we took a big pick to take him and all that, and it, you know, just was, unfortunately, it didn't happen. But, you know, we made a move last year because he wasn't here. And so that just shows you how important he was. So.
Yeah, that's a double whammy.
Oh.
Whammy, whammy. Did you like whammy? Whammy, whammy. No whammy. Double whammy. That's a double whammy. And remember, it was also Malik, I think, that did educate us all on taxes. I mean, taxes are taxes.
Taxes is taxes. Thanks. Bye. It's a mess. It's too bad. Nothing will do more to screw up your team than that. Just, need, you know, spending big resources on a pick and then spending more resources to replace him and having that guy walk out the door because he didn't fit. It's a double whammy. You're absolutely right.
Taxes is taxes.
Takeaways.
All right, you mentioned it earlier, Brock. You knew my eyes would be on the running backs. I love them.
Always are, always will be.
They always are, always will be. So here is my read on the running backs trying to make this team. Chris Carson is fast, and he's really erratic, and I mean that in a good way. You never know which direction he's going to move. He's got these incredible quick movements that are kind of herky-jerky at times. He actually has a little bit of Thomas Rawls when he was going good in him.
Yes.
Especially at practice, the way he runs hard and sort of the balled-up muscle, and then all of a sudden these quick cuts back and forth. He's running really, really hard. Rashad Penny's just smooth and subtle. Every cut he makes has a really cool economy of movement, and I love the contrast between these two guys.
D versus Cano. D Gordon's helmet flying off everywhere, right? Just like flying into spaces you'd never imagine that he would get to. Cano, smooth. Now, the ground that they cover, Penny's going to cover nearly as much ground as Carson. I don't think Robbie covers nearly the ground nor as fast as obviously D Gordon can. But that's what you're talking about. Just an economy of effort with Penny. You know, one of those striders that, in, you know, I think probably most representative of those kickoff return touchdowns, which is part of the reason why he's a first round pick. Mm. You know, what he can do in that phase of the game. Kickoffs are going to look like punt returns. And this guy is so subtle in his movements, yet, you know, gets an awful lot done. And I think that's a good comp. And anybody sitting on that berm can notice that. It doesn't take any football savant to say, oh my gosh, look at these style differences. And bad Penny's to have for a defense to face against either.
True. Pennies won't pop in practice. Like, I don't think you'll really watch him in practice and be like, that dude looks great. At least that's my impression, is that that's the style that will play well in games, but won't, like, look great.
Did you watch the Seahawks when Sean Alexander was around?
No.
In the 05, the early 2000s?
Nope.
No.
Never.
Because there is a Sean Alexander to Rashad Penny. Someone around the Hawks told me that. Mm. Just as far as movement, and it's from, especially from, like, the 20 in, when Sean smelled the touchdown and his numbers and stats and the way to his MVP season, like, that guy, that would be, for Seahawks fans, I think, a pretty good comp of just the amount of kind of power and ease of effort and a lot of execution.
All right, there you go. Those are takeaways from day one of practice. My eyes, Brock's explanation. A couple of quick ones. I just enjoy watching Trey Flowers. He's the safety they drafted out of Oklahoma State who's going to play corner. He's really tall. His body type is similar to Richard Sherman.
Did you observe the ankles? Skinny ankles,
they're very,
man.
They're very, very skinny.
Oh, my gosh.
Ankles.
So thin.
Long legs, skinny ankles, and he plays physically out there.
Did you like that? I just gave a body image.
Way to go, Liz.
Fantastic.
Okay, good.
I like Cyril Grayson. I'm rooting for him. They keep trying to get him on deep balls, and they just haven't really worked, and that's not a good sign for him. And then Tyrone Swoops just seemed to make a lot of plays yesterday. Mm. Just a guy who flashed, Brock.
Yep.
He flashed.
I'm so darn proud of you, Salt. I am so proud of those takeaways.
Thanks.
Seriously.
Really?
Yeah.
That means a lot.
That is really great stuff, man. You were watching intently. You weren't just talking shop with people. You were invested. Thank you.
To be fair, most of those are just things I stole from other people.
Oh, really?
Well, you know how writers are. They're constantly trying to show you how smart they are, especially we've talked about this.
Yes.
Competitive football watching in the press box, like, oh, do you see what's going on here? They move the X safety into the Y spot. And they're like, shut up. So I just listen to them drone on and on about how smart they are at football,
yes.
And then I pretend like I did some of the work and just
great.
Tell you guys about
okay,
it.
Okay, well
Does
done.
That work?
I liked it.
Thank you, all of you writers
you
out there, for thinking
well.
You're so smart when it comes to football. All right, coming up next, we are just a few days away from the trade deadline, and yet the names are flying off the board. Is there going to be anybody left for the M's? It's coming up next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Mariners had a rough day yesterday. They didn't play. But it wasn't a great day for them. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Oakland wins again. They just swept a four-game series against the Rangers. And in every manner possible. Yesterday, just the bats again. It seems like every day they score five,
yeah,
six, seven
runs. Yeah, but three of them
runs.
Are by one run. I mean, are we going to hear about Oakland winning all these one-run games and pulling, you know, rabbits out of a hat like we had to with the Mariners when they went on the same run?
Probably not.
No, we're not. Probably not.
Probably not.
Nope. Nope.
No, you're just not.
Yeah, probably because they've been in the playoffs sometime between now and the last 17 years. So, and Billy Beane's got a track record that's, you know, a little worthy of giving him some credit and due when things come together like they're coming together for them this year.
Yeah, and there's some young players and this and that, and they're scoring 5.5 runs per game. I mean, they're putting up a lot of runs, and that bullpen at the end, their starting pitching is probably the big weakness, but between the bullpen at the end and the number of runs they're scoring, Chris Davis and Chapman and Olsen and Lowry, and it just that kid Martini was on base four times yesterday. It just seems like they're finding different ways to win every day, but it always comes back to the bat and the bullpen, and that's just doing it for them. So that didn't help. Oakland is now just one game back. And then, you know, a couple of deals that go down yesterday and some players that either the Mariners had been rumored to have some interest in or maybe they could have. The two big ones are going to be the two pitchers. J. Happ has been here before, left-hander. He goes to the Yankees. And then Cole Hamels, Brock, the guy I know you wanted, ends up going from Texas to the Chicago Cubs. I got to be honest, I didn't really want Hamels. I think that the numbers are pretty lousy. They're roughly akin to what Felix has done this year, and I'm not really interested in adding another Felix on the team.
At Texas, but away, he has much better splits. It's just, like, hitter-friendly at
True,
Texas.
But it's also, you know, against the AL West, and I've seen Houston rough him up a couple times. Oakland just roughed him up. I don't know. It's just that made me awfully nervous. Plus, you're taking on some money. And then J. Happ is fine. You know, I certainly wouldn't have minded it, but you have to give up some legitimate prospects in order to make that happen. So there's two deals that get done. And then the last one was Martin Maldonado, the catcher from the Angels. I know that that's not a deal the Mariners would make because it's with the Angels, but I would have loved to see Martin Maldonado here. I really like him as a player, and I think they could use an upgrade at that position.
Yeah, so I think I'm left, probably like a lot of Mariners fans, wondering, hey, Jerry, is there something that's going to get done? Right now, we're days away. It's coming upon us. What, next Tuesday is trade deadline? And is there something between now and then that we're going to get done? Because I don't think any of us believe, even with the addition of Robbie Cano, that that is going to simply be enough in August and September.
What do you think?
They have to make a move. You got to make a move. Yeah, you have to add. You have to add a reliever. You know, I'm going to guess it's still the controllable thing. You know, they've got their values that they look for and their assets and their market. And I appreciate that they're not going to be like me and have emotion involved in it, right? They're not going to manage the team like a fan or the organization like a fan. They're going to do it from their perspective, which has been very, very productive in turning the young core over. But I would love to see something. I'm rash. I'm emotional. I'm a fan that so desperately wants to see this thing get finished and get out of that 17-year drought. So I would love to see a move made by Tuesday.
You mentioned controllability. Obviously, that's important to this team. Jerry's pulled some moves. It was about a year ago. He traded for Marco Gonzalez. Mike Leake came soon after that. And controllability was an enormous concern in both of those deals. Jerry did the Jerry DePoto show with Danny David Moore yesterday. And once again, controllability matters to him.
Our involvement has been very consistent. You know, we've got specific targets that we've been in line with. We have been in touch with just about every team in the league, at least those we know to be sellers. We have positioned ourselves as buyers. I don't think that's a secret. But we are going to be selective in what we do. And I'll stress again, control is important to us, the ability to control players moving forward if we are going to give up what we believe are more impact minor league assets. Or prospect type assets, but we're also open to renting players if the acquisition cost is tolerable for us, if that makes sense.
You want me to create a nightmare scenario for you?
Sure. I'm good for it. Like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 7?
Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street Part 7.
Okay.
The A's have a ton of prospects. They trade for Bryce Harper.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Okay. I'm just going to throw out a nightmare scenario for you. The A's have a lot of prospects. They trade for Bryce Harper. The Nationals are around 500. There's a decent chance they're not going to make the playoffs. We all know Bryce Harper is going to walk at the end of the year and get $300 million probably from the Yankees. Why not trade him now? And the A's certainly have enough prospects. Billy Beane has shown a willingness in the past to make a move like that. We saw him trade for John Lester and Jeff Samardzija a few years ago. He's willing to take on a rental player if he believes it's going to push his team over the top, because his whole thing is built along wait, pounce. If this is a year he thinks he's good enough to pounce, what if they trade for Bryce Harper?
Yeah, that would not be pleasant. I would think if they got an ace frontline, you know, Chris Archer, to be honest with you, would probably be a little scarier to me.
They could do that too.
Yeah, they could. If they were to get just kind of a shutdown, pretty elite top of the rotation guy, as Harper struggled a little bit in a non-hitter's ballpark down there in Oakland and everything else. I'll say this. I listened to that, and here's not a nightmare scenario, but in listening to that cut now a couple different times, this is what I would love to see. If you do not want to give up the Kyle Lewis's and a few of your prospects, which I understand is you're trying to build a totally depleted farm system, then you've got to do something with your 25 guys. There's got to be some creative move with your 25-man roster. And if it's got to be bold and it's got to be daring and it's got to be something like, wow, they really made that move. They really moved on from Kyle Seager. They really moved on from Ryan Healy. They really moved on from one of these 25 active pieces to get something really creative done controllably. Then I'm game for that. You know, I was listening to you and Danny the other day before I jumped on Blue 42. And Danny's like, be bold. Just be bold. You just can't sit here when you got the small chips at a poker table and you watch that World Series of Poker enough and you know you got the small chips. You just can't play, fold. You're going to be out. You got to do something bold and daring. And Jerry's not afraid to do that. Hasn't been for 3 years. He's got some of that Schneider in him. He's willing to take some of that risk. Mm-hmm. And we saw earlier a creative move way earlier with Colum A and Spain. I'd like to see some creativity.
I think they would be willing to deal the right person off their 25-man roster, but I don't know that that's what they're out there trying to do, if that makes sense. By the way, some of the text machine disagreeing with you, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Why would the Mariners make a move? Why trade any future that's left to lose to the Yanks, Astros, and Sox?
Because you put yourself now into a 20 games over 500. Okay, that's something you've not done since the early 2000s. You got a group that really believes in one another and is one, and I think has been pretty battle tested through some adversity. You do have Robbie Cano coming back, and I think this team is deserving. If I'm the decision maker above them as their GM and president, and everybody else, I think they're deserving 20 games over 500 to be added to.
Couple more texts here. I'm willing to see DePoto do nothing. The crew that got us here, he's been historically stubborn at times to have the right fit. I don't see anyone out there that fits the mold. I was surprised.
Huh.
Yeah, a bunch of texts saying that they don't really want to move.
It's just a fear. This is now the Oakland's going to pass us. You know, we're so much worse than the Yankees, even though they're without their catcher and without Aaron Judge. And the Astros are without Correa and Altuve and everything else. But we're just doomed. You know, that's a doomsday mentality. Mm-hmm. So let's not add. Let's not celebrate what they've done for 102 games. Let's just worry that it's going to go wrong instead of attacking what could still go right.
Well, I would tend to agree with that. And I think if you have the opportunity to make it go right, you got to go take it. And if that means getting out there and being bold and making a deal, I'm looking forward to seeing what Jerry does here in the next couple of days. All right. We will be opening up the phone lines in 20 minutes on any subject, whatever's on your mind. So if you got some Jerry DePoto thoughts, some trade deadline thoughts, some Mariners and A's thoughts, we want to hear from you guys. 206-421-3776. And of course, training camp underway. No Earl Thomas. Malik McDowell gone. Cam Chancellor placed on the reserve list. So there's a lot of different things to get to here. Training camp. Want your thoughts on any of them at 206-421-3776. Friday morning, open phone lines as we've been doing, but it requires you guys to do your thing. So we'll do it coming up in 20 minutes after the news next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, getting ready to open up those lines. Whoa, a little loud. Anything you guys want to talk about, man? It's open phone lines coming up at 9 o'clock. So start calling now. We'll see if we can grab some of your calls and get you guys all lined up and ready on any subject. at 206-421-3776 right now. What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
Let me also point out, no Kyle again today. Ashley's been filling in the last few days. Today, we got a kid from Kent, Curtis Rogers, helping us out as well. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, Mike. Tedrick Thompson yesterday took first-team snaps at safety ahead of Delano Hill.
I'm going to see that as good news. I'm not going to write it in as finished news by any stretch. This is going to be one of the many, many, many competitions on this team. But I also don't think it means nothing. He ended the spring sessions and mini camps as a starter. You know, there's flexibility with McDougal, do a little bit of everything. But if I'm Tedrick Thompson, I'm excited. I'm going to get first crack at this thing in the lineup and do everything I can to keep that job. That's good news.
Bad news. Sorry. The idea was that Delano Hill was a higher pick. He's the thumper. The expectation was that this guy would be able to come out and take that strong safety job. You've told me on a few occasions that Bradley McDougal's a better free safety than strong safety. And the fact that Tedrick was out there first is not good news. Now, it's not the end of the world. First of all, they're going to compete for this thing. And my guess is today Delano will be getting the first team reps. But at the end of the day, I want to see Delano come out there, thump people and earn that job. And the fact that Tedrick got the first shot, I can't call that good news. Sorry.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Delano Hill's a third-round pick. Sorry.
You want to keep going?
No.
Tedrick was a fourth-round pick.
Yeah. Third-round pick. Let's go.
Tomato, tomato.
Not quite.
Potato, patata.
Not quite, no.
Frank Clark.
Delano Delano.
quesadilla, quesadilla.
Delano Delano. All right. Lydia, sorry, go.
Frank Clark is working his way back from off-season wrist surgery.
Yeah, this is not good news either. I'll say this is bad news. Now, I'm impressed that Frank played through this all last year, and I'm glad he told us what a great teammate he is. I think that's usually the first sign of being a great teammate, is telling everybody what kind of a great teammate you are. But like you, Brock, I wonder why this surgery took place so close to the season. Now, if there's a good reason for it, great. That would be good, and I will shut up and eat my words. Yeah. But it does seem a little bit odd that it would take place as late as it did, and I can't help but be suspicious, much like you are.
I would agree with all of that. That's bad news. I wanted to see Frank Clark and Deion Jordan. If you could have given me any list of guys of, hey, they're going to start training camp, they're going to hit the ground running, they're going to be available, they're going to be durable, they're going to set the tone and set the edge, not only physically on the defense, but for a D-line group that really needs, as much as the Legion of Boom's being rebuilt, so is that defensive line room. So, yeah, that's bad news. And unfortunately, I don't think either of those are going to be getting a whole lot of work anytime soon with Deion's another injury out a few more weeks, with Frank coming off surgery that I think could have been done a whole lot earlier. Yeah, to me, that's bad news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Seahawks have officially waived Malik McDowell, ending his career in Seattle.
Why do all these have to be such bad news?
Come on, there's a lot of good news, right? There's good news in the world.
Granted, the first one could have been good news, but then you said it was bad news.
I said good news.
I don't think anyone can say this is good news. The best you could call this is no news, because we've known for a while. But this pick was a mess, man. And unfortunately, they picked a guy with the wrong motor and the wrong decision-making, and it cost them that pick. It cost them the guys that they didn't draft in this place, and you mentioned some of them earlier, Brock. And then it cost them Sheldon Richardson and all the picks there. It's been a bad, bad news situation.
Agreed. But as for this yesterday, this is not surprising. This was, I think, just the timing of it with some of the different, you know, roster moves and iterations you're going to make over the course of the offseason, now into the 90-man roster that you've got for training camp, that this was just the timeline that it fit. We thought it was going to be a few months ago. There were reports out that it was then, but it was now as of yesterday, and it is bad news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
My computer is frozen here. Oh, wait. We already did this one yesterday. Cubs have acquired Cole Hamels from the Rangers.
Brock?
Yeah, Cole Hamels is my guy. I wanted Nelson Cruz resigned. That's not happening. I wanted Cole Hamels or Adam Simber. That's not happening. Both those guys are out. And now I want a different kind of right-handed wipeout reliever. That one's still hopefully on the table, but they'll probably get a lefty and a nasty guy, and it may be your guy from Baltimore anyhow.
Got traded.
The lefty from Baltimore did?
Yeah, went to the Yankees.
What?
Yeah.
Who?
Zach Britton.
Zach Britton went to the lefty. Went to the Yankees.
Oh, gosh. Bad news. Bad.
Yeah, this is bad news, too, man. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to say so. This one's not. This one doesn't bother me at all. I'll say no news. Cole Hamels not having a very good year. His numbers look kind of like Felix's. I don't see this as bad news. A-plus is going to the National League. Whatever.
news, bad news, no news.
ESPN has flexed Sunday night's Cardinals-Cubs game in favor of the 29-73 Orioles, who will take on the Yankees.
Why?
Why?
Just so we can see the Yankees?
Yes.
Oh. 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 To be fair to ESPN, there's like four good teams in baseball. Like, what are they supposed to do?
Right.
Are there any better matchups going on this week? I mean, the Cubs and the Cardinals aren't very good.
Well, didn't they just have that, Lydia, like, coming out of the All-Star break?
Yeah, and the Cardinals stink, and they're kind of giving up and trading people. Like, I don't know. That's a tough spot. So when in doubt,
the
just
Cubs
go Yankees.
Don't, though, so.
Cubs are, but Cubs
neither
are
do the Yankees.
Yeah. I'm going to say no news. I don't care. And, you know, as far as Aaron Judge fracturing a wrist, that's gonna be a little something that Yankees team's got to deal with, a little bit of adversity.
Yeah.
How do they overcome it? You know, the Red Sox are just the runaway best team going in baseball right now. They seemingly never lose, although they did yesterday.
Lost two in a row.
To those lowly Orioles.
Yeah. But, and shockingly, yeah, their Orioles, even though they only have 29 wins, like five of them are against the Yankees.
Weird.
So they're doing all right.
Could be some good baseball.
No news.
There. All right, no news. There you go. That's good news, bad news, no news. Every day, every morning at 8:45.
Hey, can you do me a favor, Saul, before we open up these phone lines?
Yeah.
Can you do a little, as I'm down here in Atlanta, get to watch my oldest daughter finish out the hoop season with a big tourney down here, which will be fun. Can you give me a little Twitterography of your camping? Can you just like post at least a picture a day, if not two?
I'll do what I can. I don't know that we may be off the grid. I mean, I don't know whether I'll be able to post pictures from where we are, Brock.
Oh, really?
I mean, I don't know whether I'll have any reception. I mean, I'm expecting to be kind of off the grid camping.
I mean, I was watching The Revenant for you on my airplane trip, just thinking about you out in the woods and camping and everything and taking on those bears.
Can I be clear about something?
Sure.
So tomorrow we're going camping with our friends. Okay. There's going to be 12 of us, six adults, six kids. And we are going, as you said, to the North Cascades, which is where you recommended. We do not have a reservation. I was not in charge of any of this. Let me be very clear.
Mm.
And so there are three sites there, and the belief is that one of them will have a walk-up spot for us.
Okay.
What are the chances that we are back home in our house tomorrow night? I think they're close to 70%.
Ooh. Are you going to try, you think, all three spots, though?
Oh, like, I'm sure we will. We're leaving early, leaving at 8:30 tomorrow morning, like packed up, ready to go, coolers filled, the Red Line Traverse from Evergreen Chevrolet, all set and ready to go, man, all packed to the gills.
Yeah.
What are the chances when it's all said and done we're back in our house tomorrow
sure
night sleeping?
I sure hope not.
I'd be willing to throw cash money on the fact that we are. I think we will be back home, and this whole camping thing is not going to happen, and we will have spent like hundreds of dollars on all this stuff.
Bet on your own game.
Like, what do you mean?
Can't. You're an influencer on that.
No, I'm not. I have nothing to do with it.
Yes, you are.
I'm not. I have nothing to do with it. I am
Mister,
following
like,
the
if
crowd.
If the weather is too bad, we are going
the
home.
The weather is going to be beautiful. I am
if
excited.
If it's too warm out, we are going home.
I want you to know I'm psyched for this more than you would imagine. I'm really excited to go camping.
And
Rob
invested.
Is in charge of finding the spot. We are just followers in this.
Yep.
I put cash money in the fact that we cannot find the space and we are back home tomorrow night.
Interesting.
All right. We're back here in just a minute. We need your phone calls on any subject, any argument you want to make in sports, Seahawks related, Mariners related, NFL related, MLB
Pac-12.
Related, Pac-12, UW Huskies, Washington State Cougars, camping for the weekend, whatever you want to say, jump on the horn and tell us right now. 206-421-3776. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.